This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for joining us on WPR News today. We're talking about all the great spas and wellness resorts right here in Wisconsin. And you'll hear all about those relaxation destinations from Ann Sayers. She's Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism. Have you tried a sauna or a massage at a Wisconsin spa? What did you like about it? Where did you go? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Secretary Sayers, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. It's always fun to hear about all the cool things that are going on in Wisconsin. And today we're going to talk about some spas. You know, Wisconsin's probably not the top of the list when you think about spas, but we've got tons here, don't we?
I mean, exactly. You know, you might first think about tailgating and cheese curds and
right.
Some of those things about Wisconsin. None of that is wrong. But, you know, we also are really making our way into the wellness space. And it's a good thing because we find that travelers are really looking for these opportunities. It's an industry that's growing at 17% a year. It's actually expected to be at more than $1.4 trillion industry globally in the next 2 years. So Wisconsin is definitely on the map and has lots of opportunities for relaxation and wellness.
Now, why do spas make a good day trip or even weekend trip?
Well, you know, it's easy enough in Wisconsin. We're a huge drive market, so you can easily hop in the car and find a location to, you know, quickly get there and just immediately fall into the relaxation that day spa is offering. And we have several resort-style spas where you can spend the night and really immerse yourself for more than 24 hours and come back to the world completely refreshed.
And it does refresh you. It might be kind of cliche to say it, but it really truly does, just to unhook for a while, right?
It really does. I have to admit, several of the places we're talking about today, I've been a customer and I'm a big fan.
Me too. I will confess the same thing. So let's start off by talking about some of the spas that I think probably first comes to mind is Kohler. So what would we find if we went to this spa?
Yes. Okay. So Kohler, you know, they're known for their high-end plumbing fixtures, but they are actually a premier spa. They're located near Sheboygan in Kohler, and they're really focused on the restorative power of. So you're going to be in this complete state of relaxation as of only 5-star spa in Wisconsin. They have world-class services, those water-based treatments and therapies, unique hydrotherapy, bathing services that take advantage of Kohler design products. So everything is very beautiful, of course. And they also have other services like facials and hair and scalp treatments. So lots of ways to melt into relaxation at the Kohler spa.
And there's a lot to do other than the spa too, isn't there?
There is, you know, you can stay overnight at the American Club. It is Wisconsin's only 5-diamond resort. It's a historic property. It will blow you away. It was actually built originally for newly arriving immigrants working at the Kohler Company, and it's now just been transformed into this all-around luxury destination. They have fresh flowers throughout, and they're actually grown on site at their garden center. They have two fabulous restaurants, the Sun-Drenched Greenhouse, where you can enjoy your pastry in the morning. There's fine dining at the Immigrant Restaurant. And they also have just, you know, plush beds, elegant furnishings, all of the Kohler fixtures in the bathroom. And then some other activities, too. You can get your heart pumping with a cycling class at their Bold Cycle Studio. You could join a Yoga on the Lake class, and that's overlooking the peaceful serenity of Wood Lake. Or you could just go hiking on the resort's trails.
And I heard there's some golf courses there. I don't. Larry mentioned that at some point.
Oh, Larry would know.
yes, he would.
World class golf courses. Some
Absolutely.
Of the big golf courses that have put Wisconsin in the national or international spotlight for golf are right outside the door.
For yeah. sure. Yeah, it's a treat all around. But there's some more, obviously. What about in the Wisconsin Dells? I mean, there's some there too, right?
Yes, I'm a big fan of Sendara Inn and Spa. This is a nationally renowned wellness destination in the Wisconsin Dells. It's a premier spa. They've received numerous awards, actually, since they opened 20 years ago now. And they blend ancient wisdom with modern wellness practices to help you feel completely recharged. They offer what they call energy therapies, including Ayurvedic massage techniques, They also use a variety of massages, facials, body treatments, and more. They even have some services designed specifically for mothers to be, men, or couples. And like I know I've done a couple girls' getaways to Sundara, which is just a really fun escape for friends.
And it's pretty central to most of the people in Wisconsin, so that is a good thing. And actually, we've got a caller. Sharon in De Pere wants to share her recommendation. Go ahead, Sharon.
Hi, we vacation every summer in Door County, and for about the past 10 years, we've been going to this spa at Sacred Grounds in Ephraim. It's amazing, and they have a little outside holy hut, and I always get my massage, my aromatherapy massage, in the quiet little hut.
I love it. I love it. Are you familiar with it, Anne?
I'm not. I just wrote it down. Thank you, Sharon. That sounds just spectacular. And of course, Ephraim, Door County, a spa, a holy hut. Can't go wrong.
You can't go wrong, absolutely. Let's now talk about Lake Geneva, another spot for people who want to come to a little bit more high end in some cases. So what do they have to offer there?
This one is very, very special. It's the Abbey Resort in Lake Geneva, and the Avani Spa is the Abbey's full service spa. It's open to overnight guests, and there's a day visitor way to enjoy it. And you're going to be treated to a complete menu of services that promote peace and relaxation. Popular options at Avani Spa include their signature body treatments. So they incorporate minerals, aromatherapy, care products to make it very unique. One example is the Lavender Dreams treatment, which uses earthy minerals and lavender. Oh, sounds so great for
Wow,
a full
I feel
body.
relaxed just so you talking about
Me
it.
too. They also have warm body oil that they'll combine with healing stones, acupressure face massages, and foot massages. Just amazing. And you can actually extend your visit to Avani Spa by spending the night at the Abbey Resort. That's opened in 1963. It's a go-to destination for Lake Geneva. The resort is located right on the lake, and it boasts more than 300 suites and guest rooms. They're modern, renovated rooms, and they have sort of a subtle nautical theme and very plush beds.
And that is a wonderful spot to spend some time doing all kinds of different things, Lake Geneva.
Well, that's what I love. All of these spas kind of land in the heart of another place in Wisconsin that if you want to step outside the resort walls and just enjoy the destination in a different way, so many options. And you're right, Lake Geneva is just spectacular.
And most of these places have, like you said, a menu of things that you can choose from. So you don't need to get a pedicure if you have a problem with people touching your feet. There's just so many different things that you probably have never experienced before.
At the Abbey, you can actually go swimming. It's an indoor pool, so any time of the year, it's a sun-soaked indoor pool. There's also an immersion entertainment center, so they have billiards, air hockey, even a movie theater. And you can also savor on-site dining locations there too. So the waterfront restaurant is known for its lake views and Friday fish fry.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about some things that are maybe like destinations for it themselves. So people spend the weekend. I believe there's one in Green Lake.
This one is so special. So you can make a trip to Berlin in Green Lake County for a wholly, what they call unique farm to spa concept. This is called the Dandelion Farm. They have luxurious goat milk products on site. They make from their own herd of 43 lovingly raised goats. So the milk there forms the heart of many of their lotions, their skincare products, soaps, and more. And then these quality products are used in a range of holistic treatments at Dandelion Farm. So they have Reiki massages. They do astrology readings. They have a salt room. You're just going to love the products and just can even actually take some of them home with you too.
Absolutely. We are talking about spa destinations in Wisconsin with Ann Sayers. She's the secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism. If you've got a recommendation or a question, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 800-642-1234. And of course, you can always send an email, and that's talk@wpr.org. And the next one on the list is right here in Madison, and it's got a pretty unique setting. Tell us about that one.
Yes, Kosha Wellness Spa and Retreat is located in the wonderfully restored Garver Feed Mill. It's actually been touted by a number of publications, including National Geographic. It is so beautiful in there. Indian-born, Madison-raised founder of Kosha grounds her treatments in Ayurveda, which is the traditional Indian art of medicine. Her services include massages and facials, wellness consultations, organic meals, and personal retreats. And you can visit for Community Spa Tuesdays for a discounted access to the spa's steam room, sauna, and sanctuary.
Oh, that's wonderful. You said about discounts. I mean, some of these can be fairly pricey. What kind of budget are we looking at here?
You know, it really depends on the location, but sometimes you just got to treat yourself. Another idea is it makes for wonderful. A lot of them offer gift cards. So it's a really nice gift, you know, for Mother's Day or for, you know, the holidays, something for people to look forward to and have that experience, which we know we see over and over again, how much people value experiences over things. And this is one of those items that people just love.
Absolutely. That's a really good point. And Mother's Day is coming up in not too long. So this might be a good thing to give to the mom in your life. And then if we could go way up to Bayfield, there's another one that's kind of interesting, too. Tell us about that one.
Absolute gem here in the Wild Rice Retreat. It's a wellness resort in beautiful Bayfield County. It's right on the shores of Lake Superior. It's all rooted in nourishment, expression, and movement. You'll spend the night in beautiful Scandinavian-inspired lodging, very warm and cozy, best night's sleep ever. The resort is all about fostering wellness, and there's actually a bunch of classes and experiences that you can participate in. There's relaxing massage therapies, insightful professional coaching, transformative energy balancing, and they actually host guided retreats too. So that's something to look into. It's multi-day organized retreats, and they bring in well-known wellness instructors and experts, and then they lead retreat groups through guided activities to evolve and grow together.
As I love that all of these have their own special uniqueness to it that kind of represents their area or what they do. We're going to be up there with the show at the end of May, so for Bayfield and Bloom, so maybe I'll check that one out. We have a call from Phil in Cumberland. Go ahead, Phil.
Hi, I just wanted to talk about a relatively new spa in Cumberland. It's called Salud, S-A-L-U-D, Spa in Salt Cave. They have a wonderful salt cave, hydro massage, massages, as well as hair care, beauty product. I mean, just an amazing place in downtown Cumberland. My favorite is Salt Cave. You're in there for half an hour, 45 minutes, and you come out and you feel like a brand new person.
Oh, that's wonderful, Phil. Thank you so much. Is that one new to you, Anne?
It is. And, you know, Phil, while you were talking, I looked it up, and that salt cave is gorgeous. I definitely would like to check that out.
Yeah, that is a fairly new offering, isn't it, salt caves?
Yes. And you can find them in a lot of places now. And he's right. You do feel like a new person when you emerge.
It's amazing. Who would have thought? And there's floating pools. And it's just endless of all the new things that you can try. Self-care, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's having its moment for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was one of the questions I had. Now, this is really, you had mentioned how big it's been getting, but I mean, 30 years ago, you never really even heard much about this, did you?
You really didn't. And I just love how Wisconsin has embraced the trend. And I think it's very authentic to who we are in a state with these two great lakes, and the 15,000 inland lakes, where we're nearly half covered in forest. And I just think it lends itself well to revitalizing yourself. This is a place where you can find a lot of peace and quiet and connection to nature, connection to self. And we're seeing these locations embrace it and doing it really, really well. I mean, getting nationally recognized for the kinds of services they're putting out there.
Yeah, if you consider what the competition is, That really is a good one for Wisconsin, for sure. Let's go to Clark County and the Christine Center. What's that one doing there?
Yes, it's just all about inner peace and renewal at the Christine Center. They welcome visitors of all backgrounds to find stillness and peace at this retreat center. It's been there for more than 40 years, and they've embraced the Franciscan principles of contemplation, hospitality, compassion, simplicity, transformation, and care for the earth. So when you arrive, you'll be welcomed under the proclamation of We Are One, and you'll be encouraged to take a journey of self-discovery while you're there. It offers a range of programming for visitors. There's personal retreats. You can do multi-day group workshops focusing on practices like yoga, meditation, other transformational experiences, and then spend the night at the Christine Center in one of their guest rooms or in one of the modern Hermitage cabins.
Hermitage cabins. That's interesting. I bet you they're a little bit nicer than those old hermit caves, right?
I think it's hermit inspired.
I think you are right. Now, saunas are just all the rage right now. We had an article or a show about one not too long ago. Our friends at Wisconsin Today just actually went out and experienced one. And right now, there are a couple that you recommend. What's great about the Nordic Night Sauna? That's in Stevens Point.
There are so many, but yeah, we pulled a few for you here in Stevens Point. The Nordic Night Sauna is a community-driven sauna experience. They opened this public sauna powered by a wood-fired Finnish stove. It's a communal sauna experience tucked into an urban oasis in downtown Stevens Point, and it's surrounded by flower beds and flora. Also, you could check out the Wellness Spa for another option to add to your trip while you're in Stevens Point. They offer treatments rooted in Eastern therapies, and they lead classes in Tai Chi, Qigong, and yoga.
Wonderful. And then up in Door County, there's one too, right?
There is. So this is a really fun idea in Door County. This sauna comes to you. It's called Up North Saunas. It's in Sister Bay. It's at least based there, but they offer mobile sauna rentals. So the company will actually transport the wood-burning barrel sauna to you so you can enjoy it for up to a week. So you could do that thing where you book a place, bring your whole travel party, and then actually rent a sauna to put on site right next to you while you enjoy your Door County getaway. Perfect if you're renting a cabin or a house. And each sauna is large enough to accommodate up to 6 people.
Oh, my gosh.
It comes with 2 bundles of firewood. You get essential oils. You get traditional sauna hats, a 100-gallon dunk tank if you're looking to take the ice bath after your steamy sauna. And they will actually just bring it right to your front door. Isn't that cool?
That is such a great idea. I love that. I love that. So what are some of your favorite treatments when you go to a spa?
Well, I definitely love the sauna, but I'm not as big on the ice dunk afterward.
Yeah.
But I know that's hard. I know if an expert were on here, they would say, no, Anne, do the full thing. But I like the sauna part a lot.
I know. I've heard, you don't even feel it. You're nice and warm and what you act. I probably not. I think I'll pass that myself, too. So what else has been going on with the department lately? Gearing up towards spring things?
Yes, it's a really big year for Wisconsin tourism. Once again, in 2023, we broke a record at $25 billion in economic impact. And it just feels like Wisconsin has kind of arrived at a new level after having shown Top Chef and hosted that. And now we have the NFL draft coming up next month, which means a whole lot of people will either be coming to the Fox Valley or they will be watching us on TV. So we want to make sure that we're telling the whole story of all that Wisconsin has to offer. And it's just so much, from outdoor recreation and culinary to the arts and culture. And now this whole world of wellness and relaxation. There's just so many things we want to talk about and ways we want to welcome people to our state so they can experience it in every single season.
Yeah. Now talk a little bit about your website, because that is really a key to finding great things to do or places to see, isn't it?
Yes. I really recommend people take a look at it, whether you're just planning a day trip or you're looking for your summer getaway, travelwisconsin.com. We have over 16,000 listings of different locations and things to do. We have seasonal reports. So snow report is close to wrapping up here, although the ski hills are still making some snow, so you can find some hills and slopes still open, but use that to plan your snow getaways. But then coming up will be the trail report, just talking about all of the many trails in Wisconsin, what kind of condition they're in, how you might plan what restaurant or hotel you want to, or attraction you want to visit while you're doing your outdoor recreation. So just a lot of planning resources like that that give you hopefully lots of inspiration of more things to do.
For sure. Now, if someone's out there listening right now and says, hey, how come my event isn't on your page? How do they get listed?
Yes. So events are a huge part of what we do. And actually, I think as Wisconsinites, we don't realize how good we are at events. Other states don't do it like we do it. We celebrate everything. We have thousands of events during the year. So we have made it a priority to make sure they're on our website. There is a button on the site where you can submit an event if there's one we've missed. We always want to know that because, I mean, it's likely that visitors will find, if they're looking what to do this weekend or I'm looking in this part of the state, that event will pop up. And a lot of times that will center a trip and they'll kind of build out their itinerary from there.
Sure. I like that. I think it should be our new tagline. Wisconsin, we celebrate everything.
We really do, right?
I love that.
Nature. Yeah, it's this very welcoming sense of things. Like, we're going to do this thing. We'd like all of you to come and experience it with us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, try the food and take the photo and try some new activity you haven't tried before. We love offering that to people. And I'm always it's just like so heartwarming to talk to visitors when they say it was unexpected and I felt so welcomed. And those are always the big things you hear about Wisconsin. We're really good at it.
Yep. Hospitality for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for to sharing those spas. And there are many more out there. So just have to go to the website, take a look and find one that fits for you. So thank you for being with us.
So nice to be here. Thank you. Take care.
You too. Ann Sayers is Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism, and we like to check in with them every once in a while to see what's going on. I'm sure we'll do that come spring. Up next, we're going to hear how trivia games are made with the owner of Quizmaster Trivia. And then at noon, we talk with the author of Bummer Camp. It's a fun novel about summer camp and family. Okay, so our first trivia question is going to be for our guest and ask him, what show was that theme from? And we'll see if he knows the answer. And our guest has been, could be maybe called a walking encyclopedia. He's written more than 50,000 trivia questions. I'm Jill Nadeau. This is the Larry Mueller Show, and we're talking about pub trivia. And the man that we're going to put on the spot is Ryan Wickens. He is with us, and he's the founder and owner of Quizmaster Trivia. And the company holds trivia events across Wisconsin, Chicago, and the Twin Cities. And we have a trivia question for you from him. So our next guest is going to be talking about a book, and part of that is going to be centered on Wizard of Oz. So we thought we would have a question or two about that. So here's the question. Some consider this the world premiere showing. On August 12th, 1939, The Wizard of Oz was screened at the Strand Theater in which Wisconsin town? Was it A, Green Bay, B, Manitowoc, or C, Oconomowoc? And if you've listened to our show before, you should know this answer. But if you do, just send us an email at talk@wpr.org, and we'll give you a shout out if you get it right. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Hello. How's it going?
It's going great. So do you know what the game show was from that music?
That was Family Feud, of course.
You got it. You got it. Okay.
We actually have a different name for that in the UK. It's called Family Fortunes. I don't know why it's different, but it's the exact same show. We just
copyright.
We have different words for things, right? Soccer, football is a good example of that. So thanks for having me on today.
For sure. Well, I love trivia, and I think most people do. how do your contests work?
Yeah, so we, it's called Pub Trivia, Pub Quiz, Trivia Night. There's different names for it. But, the whole point of it is to kind of get people to come in groups together. It's like a social event. We try not to take ourselves too seriously. But the format is really straightforward. You have a live host at each bar. We kind of team hosts with venues for that familiarity where you're seeing the same person every week. And that really helps build the audience. And people come in groups of up to 8 players. It's an old school because sometimes people ask me, is it done on your phone? Is it done on the TVs? But, the charm of our format and a lot of other pub trivia formats to be honest, is that it's a pen and paper game. So we, you know, we're on our phones way too much. All of us can agree on that. So for 2 hours, you put your phone away, you get a piece of paper and a pen. We have a 6-round format. Each round is split into 5 questions. So it's a 30 question total. And then we actually end the game with a lightning round. It's like a speed category at the very end. And we have other gimmicks that we involve on our specific format. We have some wager categories where you're kind of betting questions based on how confident you are of your answers, which is not always, you know, people aren't always too confident. And then we also always have a picture category where people are kind of referencing visual clues for one round, which is kind of a unique thing to our specific game. I don't know how many other trivia nights or companies do that. So
do you send out then a quiz master to the venue? Is that how that works?
Yeah, we partner with, you know, people who are local to the location usually. And they, you know, have a location they're paired with. They go to the location. We provide all the content, all the supplies, all the marketing. You know, it's kind of the reason bars hire us is it's an all-inclusive service. You know, I have friends who own bars, and it is a lot of work, and there's a lot of things they're juggling. So, you know, hiring a company to just take care of all of that is really beneficial for them. But yeah, we have, you know, hosts that partner at each location. Some hosts do multiple days a week. Just depends on their schedule and stuff. But yeah, we make it as easy as possible for the venues by providing all of the content, all of the supplies, and so forth.
How did you get involved in this? Now, obviously, you're from the UK. Now, I know that's really popular there.
I'm so happy you said that in Australia, because I get the Aussie thing all the time. Oh. Yeah. So, yeah, it's funny. Pub quizzes, as we call them in England, have been around for like decades, like since the 70s and 80s. And when I moved over here in 2003, I came for college in Milwaukee, and I ended up working at a British pub my senior year, and like nowhere, it was not a thing now. Like, trivia nights are now everywhere. And in like 2006, I think it was, my senior year is when I started the pub quiz business. I say that for people who can't see, because it's radio, with like air quotes, because right. It really wasn't a business at the time. It was just me. I worked at the bar, the owner of the pub, it was a British pub, was also British. And he kind of said, let's do a quiz night. Like, you know, no one was doing it. And I just was kind of, it was kind of one of those situations where it was like right place, right time. I ended up running the game. There were some other people working there, obviously, but it kind of fell on my shoulders eventually. And it was like super popular. It was a very small bar, had like a seating capacity of like 60. But I think that benefited it, because it was easy to fill, and we would fill it up every week. And then like the word got out, and there were a group of guys who came in every week who had a friend who owned another British pub on the other side of town. And, you know, after about a year of doing it, that guy came to me and said, hey, would you do this at my, cause I never initially, I was just kind of a side hustle that I'm just kind of doing, for some extra cash and for some fun. I already work there. And then when this person came along and asked me to, you know, try at his venue, that's kind of when the idea for, okay, well, there's actually a demand for this. And then the demand started growing. We did it at the Milwaukee Ale House. A lot of these old clients are not around anymore. And then it just kind of grew from there, and it kind of grew organically. It didn't explode like overnight. It was a lot of like, you know, just gradual word of mouth, you know, advertising in that respect. And, you know, now we're up to, as you said in your intro, like multiple cities and states and stuff where we do our events. So
that's wonderful. And I love that it was so organic too. Sometimes those are the best, most stable businesses.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sure. I guess the question probably everybody asks you is like, where do all these questions come from?
It's funny you say that. Yeah. The two questions people ask me are like, well, when they start talking to me and hear me, they ask me where I'm from. We already talked about that. Yeah. They ask me like, how did it start? But the one I get asked the most often is, where do you get the questions from? And a magician doesn't reveal his secrets. I'm kidding. I have like various sources that I reference, but I'm, because when you run your own business, you're like constantly working, you're constantly thinking about how you can improve things. So I'm just always on the lookout. I'll be watching TV and the show I'm watching will throw up a fact and I'm like, oh, you flip that on its head and it's like a trivia question, right? So like I'll take like voice notes in my phone if I'm out somewhere. You know, there's various websites where I go for references where I can look things up. And again, I'm not a copy and paste question writer because, and I think part of our success, you know, our small success as a small business is like we do have good content and people enjoy that. And trivia files will notice if it's like, oh, we just got these off some website or just, you know, basic questions. You really have to do your research, particularly when we do like themed events like our Harry Potter and Disney games. But I've just been compiling the questions for so long now that I actually have more than 50,000 questions. Sorry to correct you, but it's more like 70. Because I at first I wasn't saving them, but after a couple of years and once we start getting more clients, I'd be like, it might be useful to have this content to reference or reuse years down the road. And if we do reuse content, it's not for at least 3 or 4 years. But most of the time I'm writing new stuff because I just know people are gonna know that they heard that question before. So
it's amazing. Yeah. You can remember, you know, you remember the question, but sometimes you don't remember the answer. At least that's my problem. So, we haven't heard from anybody yet with that answer to that first question that we gave. I'm going to give you one more chance. Some consider this the world premiere showing on August 12, 1939. The Wizard of Oz was screened at the Strand Theater in which Wisconsin town? Was it Green Bay, Manitowoc, or Oconomowoc? Okay, so just send an email into talk@wpr.org. Do you have another one for me, Ryan?
Another question?
Yeah, give me a question.
I'll read one to you. Are you going to answer or are the people going to answer?
I'm going to answer.
Okay. I'll give you, quote unquote, an easy one.
Okay. Okay.
One of the advantages I have as someone who's been doing this for like almost 20 years is a lot of when you're writing content, it's figuring out, is it hard or is it easy? Because when you already know the answer, it's easy to you, right? But you've got to kind of put yourself in people's shoes. Mm-hmm. And our games have like a good balance of easy and difficult questions. We want it to be fun. So this is hopefully, but sometimes I'm wrong about that, whether it's hard or easy. This is hopefully one of the easier questions. So here's a question for you. Composed of long and thin fibers, what harmful industrial substance was used as the snow on the set of The Wizard of Oz?
Has to be asbestos.
It is asbestos. Yeah. Well, that was, you know, I'm reading about The Wizard of Oz, you know, and I've not just for today, but, you know, it's a popular film and we've asked content about it in the past. And it seems like their standards, and I think the world in general, were not quite as high as they are now because there were numerous kind of hazards on set. And if you want another question, I've got another one for you.
I think I know what you're going to ask, but go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Okay. The next one is Buddy Ebsen was cast as the original Tin Man in The Wizard of Oz, but he had to abandon the part after being hospitalized due to an allergic reaction to what?
The face paint, right? The silver aluminum
base
paint.
Yeah, the makeup actually was made of, and I have to say it this way because I'm English, aluminium powder, aluminum, as you would say. Yes. But there's other stories like the Wicked Witch of the West, the actress who played her, Margaret Hamilton, I think was her name. She had some reaction to I think her green makeup was like copper based.
Yes.
So like they had all these metal based makeups back then and it, you know, didn't jive well with most people.
Yeah.
So.
And I think when she went through that trap door in the, where Dorothy first comes to Oz, it was fire and she had really bad burns because
of it. That's right.
So.
I did read that as well, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So we've got a couple of guesses. So Bill emailed us and his guess is Green Bay. And Nancy in Rubicon emailed us and her guess was Oconomowoc.
You want the answer?
I do.
Okay, so the first town where apparently the Wizard of Oz screened ever was the Strand Theater in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. Did I say it right?
You did.
Nobody said long enough to pronounce those town names. Yeah.
We did have someone from one of the museums in Oconomowoc on to talk about that last year.
Oh, nice.
Okay, yeah. Awesome. So there's some technicalities, but I'm glad you put some.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So, all right. How about one more Wizard of Oz one for people who are listening?
Okay, I've got two questions. They are both multiple choice, just like the theater one. So a pair of Dorothy's, because they had, like on set, they have multiple, you know, pairs of shoes and dresses and stuff. But one pair of Dorothy's famous red slippers sold at auction in December 2024, so just a couple of months ago. How much did they go for? How much did the red ruby slippers sell for at auction 2 months ago? Was it A, $1.7 million? That's the lowest option. B, $9.9 million, or C, $32.5 million. So Dorothy's famous red slippers sold 2 months ago, $1.7 million, $9.9 million, or $32.5 million.
Okay, so if you think you know the answer without Googling now, don't you? Yeah, it's talk@WPR.org. If you have a question or a comment about pub trivia, you can give us a call, 800-642-1234, and we'd love to hear from you. So you do theme nights.
Yes.
Now, I don't know if it was the honor, but I did have to do a Harry Potter trivia night.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, luckily it was other people involved, because I thought, oh, I have these great ones. I love Harry Potter. I mean, people were just whipping through these questions like it was nothing. So how do you, like you said, make sure that people who don't know a lot and those who really know a lot are satisfied with your quiz?
Yeah, that's the fine balance between, you know, having a great quiz night and one that isn't so good. It's kind of just finding that balance. There's going to be questions that we read, and usually the first couple are kind of gimmies.
Okay.
And I kind of say when I'm hosting, because I still host from time to time, not as much as I used to, you know, if you don't know this first one, then your team's in trouble.
You know,
we try to make that first question easy. We give people a full sense of confidence. We lure them in. But it's just a balancing act of, you know, hard versus easy. People find out, you know, when they go to a theme game, like you said, oh, I'm a Harry Potter super fan. Maybe I'm not so much of a super fan based on what happened here today. But, you know, we have the wager categories. We have the picture round. We make stuff. It's a hard way to explain it, but we make it answerable sometimes without making it impossible. Mm-hmm. And that's just a lot of times that's how the question is written. You know, where people can kind of surmise or come up with an intelligent guess at the very least.
I like,
you know,
that. Not feel,
you know, it's just if you're there and you're like, I have absolutely no idea. I can't even write something down. I'm so lost. You know, we try to avoid that as much as possible.
Sure.
Yeah.
We're talking with Ryan Wickens. He is the founder and owner of Quizmaster Trivia. What do you want to know about the work that goes into your weekly trivia? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@WPR.org.
You might want to add some inflation to that answer, because the correct answer was actually $32.5 million, which is just outrageous.
It can't imagine someone with that much disposable income.
I know. It's definitely among the most expensive, like, items memorabilia wise ever sold. So, you know, it is iconic, but I don't know if it's worth that amount.
Yeah, well, we'll see. They do keep going up, so I guess maybe it's a good investment. I don't know.
Yeah.
So how have you, you know, you've been doing this for, what'd you say, like 20 years. So how have things changed in the pub trivia business since then?
Yeah, well, you know, when we started, smartphones and the internet was not nearly as prevalent. Obviously, 2006 was our first year. And people always ask me, how do you prevent people from cheating, right? That's like one of the things, because it's so easy to find out stuff these days. And really my answer is, most of the time we don't have to, because the people that are coming and are going to come every week, they enjoy the challenge of playing trivia. And so it kind of defeats the purpose to like Google something and to win what like most venues are giving away. Some gift cards to the venue. It's normally not a ton of money. It might cover like a couple of rounds of drinks. Depends on the location. But so that's not an issue for us as much as people might think. And then it's just the evolving with your audience, you know, our target market for many places, not all, because trivia does transcend, you know, age groups, but 25 to 40 people are kind of going out more during the week. Most of our events are weeknights. And so it's just evolving the content to be relevant for people. Although there's stuff, you know, there's definitely useless knowledge questions. I have a whole useless knowledge category archive that, like I said, transcend age groups. So it doesn't matter how old people are. But otherwise, the only other thing that really changed for us was obviously when COVID-19 happened. That was a tough time for us, as it was for all restaurants, because we're like an in-person business where people have to come and play. So we actually did do virtual trivia online. And that was kind of different for us. I had the content, but I kind of had to format it so people could play online. We sent them a link. The first night we did that, you know, because our business kind of went to zero overnight. It, you know, we all remember it kind of happened suddenly when things closed down. And what happened is I was like, I'll put together this virtual quiz in like 3 days. And we sent out, you know, the message to our followers via social media. And I'm thinking, you know, maybe we'll have like 30 or 40 teams. And our business wasn't as big in 2019, 2020 as it is now. It really grew a lot in the last 2 or 3 years. But I was thinking maybe 40, 50 teams. And we had 500 teams playing that first night. And like people are doing their own Zoom chats, you know, because people can't be together. Mm-hmm. So I estimate like most, and that was the case. We did it 3 days a week for 3 months, and then we kind of scaled back a bit. But it was most nights 400 to 500 teams, and people from what I could see online were in groups of 5, 6, 7, 8 people. So it was like thousands of people playing at a time, which was fun. And we had an accompanying live stream that was good, but I'm pleased we're not doing it anymore, because doing it in person is, like most things, just way better. So
sure. Well, it must have been a lifeline for a lot of people during those times.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it really was. Yeah. Helped us get through it for sure.
Yeah. So have you heard of the book by Richard Osman called We Solve Murders? He's the guy that wrote the Thursday Murder Club books.
Okay.
He's a Brit, but he's got one of the characters is addicted to pub trivia.
Oh, really?
Pub
okay.
quiz. Oh, yes. In fact, he's out there trying to solve. Yeah, he's trying to solve murders, and he has to go back. You know, wants to go back for his trivia night. So,
that's funny.
Yeah, you should take a look at that. It's funny.
I will, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So, okay. Throw me another question.
Do you want a Wizard of Oz question or something?
Yeah, throw me something else. Throw me something else.
Okay, so here's a good one for you. This is like a classic trivia question that I ask people when people just say they find out I run a trivia company. Oh, give me a question, you know, because I got a lot going on up here, but there's a few in my head that are kind of my go-tos. So this one is actually a 7-point answer. And this is something you'll see in our games. A lot of the questions I've asked so far about the Wizard of Oz, it's like a one word, a one part answer.
Mm-hmm.
And something that makes our game unique is we have various questions, and it's random throughout our game where you can get multiple points. So on this one, 7-point answer. For example, if you were playing at a trivia night and you got 5 out of 7, you get 5 points. So you can get like partial credit.
Okay.
And that's what makes this kind of fun, is you can still, it's not an all or nothing answer. So here's the question for you. Which 7 letters in the English alphabet also serve as Roman numerals?
Ah.
So you get a point for each of the 7 you can get. So
I.
Mm-hmm.
C.
C is 100. Yep.
V.
That's where the V. Yep.
M. X.
Nice. Yes. You got 2 to go.
Oh gosh. L.
L is 50. A lot of people get that because of the Super Bowl. You know,
oh yeah, that's true. I never thought about that. Yeah. So there's
and then
one.
The one you're missing. The one you're missing is the one people always miss. So you have I, V, X, L, C, and M.
And. I don't know. I don't know. Oh, come on. I got 6
right. They told
me
they'd play the sound effects. The last answer is D.
E.
D is 500. D is in Daisy, yeah, for 500.
Wow.
So, Yeah, I is 1, V is 5, X is 10, L, as we said, is 50. C, which is where the word century comes from, is 100. Mm-hmm. And then they didn't have a number that was higher than 1,000 in Roman numerals. So M is 1,000.
Okay.
And B, D, as we said, is 500.
I love it. See, yeah, I learned something too.
Yeah,
So, you know, and seeing that, what makes a good host for trivia, you know, like yourself? I mean,
for sure.
What kind of personality?
So obviously we train all of our hosts on site at venues to run the game. A lot of times people who apply are people who played, and not just one time, like people who played for weeks or months or years, then become hosts because, you know, maybe they're... Maybe certain people on their team left and can't make it anymore, and they still want to be involved. And hosting is a great way to do that. But obviously, I'm looking for people who are reliable. You know, it's a weekly event in most cases. Most of our clients do it, you know, every Wednesday, every Thursday, whatever the day is. So you need to be reliable and be there every week. Obviously, there are exceptions to that where people might be on vacation or sick. But you need to be, you know, outgoing and engaging. You don't have to be an expert at trivia. Because a lot of times people think, oh, you have to know it all. But I provide all the content for them. And 99% of our content is correct. You know, I'm not going to say it's 100% because sometimes...
we all make a mistake.
Yeah, we won't go into that. But, you know, you want to be engaging. We teach people when they're at the venue to build up a rapport with their customers and with their audience. Because you will see, you know, repeat teams and repeat customers. People tend to have a venue that's their go-to place. And so, you know, we, you know, coach our quiz masters, as we call them, to just engage with people and have fun with it and make it their own. We kind of give them the format and the structure, but I give hosts like a lot of freedom to run the game to a degree, how they want it to, what music they want to play, because they are usually in control of the music because they have to kind of pause the music when they're speaking. And so that all kind of adds to the vibe of that specific host.
Do the venues usually have all the sound equipment and things that they need?
It varies. Sometimes we have to provide equipment, whether that's plugging into their house sound or providing a speaker. But, you know, it definitely makes my life easier if locations have their own equipment. Every venue is different.
Now, I heard that you do things like for Fortune 500 companies like Miller Coors and GE. Did you twist your trivia for those particular companies? I mean, you need to make it fun, right?
We do have safe for work trivia, yes, because I wouldn't say so much the content, but certainly like the team names, because all our locations are pub trivia locations. People get a prize for first and second place, and then we have the best team name prize, and people come up with these wild team names that I cannot say on air, unfortunately, but you can go to our website and see them because we have blog posts every month with all the best team names. But for corporate clients, certainly we are on our best behavior. I send my best hosts, and the content reflects that. And we have, like you said, worked for, you know, we've done smaller events for fundraisers. I've done weddings. I did an 8-year-old's birthday party once upon a time. I've done trivia on a boat before, like the riverboat cruises have hired us. But then we have done stuff for Harley Davidson. I've done stuff for the Brewers, the Packers, Miller Coors, you know, Cola and various other like well-known Wisconsin companies. So we're often seen as kind of a go-to when, you know, corporate events want, you know, something for their employees to engage in. So it definitely works really well for that.
Well, wonderful. And thank you for sharing some of your questions and for telling us about your business. It sounds like a really fun way to live your life.
Yeah, it's something, like I said, I kind of fell into and it grew organically, and I'm pleased that I do it. And just working with yourself, just from an entrepreneur standpoint, it there's nothing quite like it. So
wonderful.
The American dream lives on. Okay.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you, Ryan Wickens. He's the founder and owner of Quizmaster Trivia. We're going to be back in just a bit. We're going to be talking to the author of Bummer Camp. Stay with us.
Hello, mother. Hello, father. Here I am at Camp Granada. Camp is very...
Well, if you are of a certain vintage, you probably recognize that song. And it's a hint because we are talking about a book today that is built around a camp, and it's called Summer Camp. I'm Jill Nadeau. This is the Larry Mueller Show, and we're really glad that you stuck around with us on WPR News. Our guest is author Ann Garvin. She's in the studio with us. She's a USA Today best-selling author and a finalist for the Thomas Wolfe Fiction Prize. Ann's written six novels, and today we're going to talk about her latest. And luckily enough, she's based right here in Madison. As we talk to Ann, we want to hear from you. Did you attend summer camp when you were younger? Tell us about the memories you made. Or let us know what you love about Ann's writing. Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Ann, so thank you so much for being with us today.
It's kind of a dream for me. I'm a little nervous, and I never get nervous, but this is sort of a dream to be on WPR.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. I'm so glad we could do this for
me
you.
Me too. Thank you so much.
You bet. Well, I just can't believe you have six novels, and this is kind of the first one that's come to our attention, so I apologize.
No, don't apologize. This is it's a noisy field.
It really is, and it seems to get noisier
so
as
noisier.
The day goes by. I mean, in my job here, I get so many physical books, PDFs, emails. It's so difficult to, pick them out.
It must be impossible, honestly.
Yeah, it really does get difficult. And I apologize for anyone who we haven't gotten on the air, but we can only do so many.
Yeah.
Because we do read our books. We don't just page through them.
I heard. So. That made me so happy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's kind of fun for us, too, because we generally, pick books that we probably wanted to read. And that's why I took this one away from Larry. mostly because it's a theater camp and I'm a theater kid. So, I really appreciated that. Aww. So for those who don't know what Bummer Camp is about, give us a synopsis.
So it's the story is about a camp for anxious and depressed adults that's run by anxious and depressed college students.
I love that.
And there's kind of a ne'er-do-well, I call him a poor man, Tony Robbins, who is running it. And then he leaves with all of the resources, all of the money and supplies, because there's going to be a big gala that they have to throw to save the camp. All of the people that love the camp, they have to throw the camp with only the things that they have on hand at this Wisconsin northern camp.
That's right. It is set in the middle of Wisconsin, where there's a lot of really nice camps. Mm-hmm. Did you use a camp? Did you have a camp in mind when you were doing this?
Yes. Lions Camp up in Rorschach, Wisconsin. Okay. I was a nurse there.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. It was my first job after nursing school, and it was with kids that were hearing impaired, sight impaired, and differently abled. Mm-hmm. And there was no way I was qualified. No way.
sort of like the people in your book.
Yeah, right? Just like the people in my book. And it was also one of the most formative jobs or times in my life. It was such a strong force moving forward. In fact, it's the reason that I moved to Madison, but because of the people that were there. But just the camp does the magic. I always say the camp does the magic for you. And you know what it's like in theater when you make a community, you get so tight with the people that you're doing your production with.
Yes.
Well, camp is like that because you're out in the woods making your own rules and nothing seems strained there.
No, it doesn't.
Nothing
does. It.
And everything you do is so odd. Like I look back at the pictures and I show people pictures and they're like, why are you dressed like a robot? And I'm like, it's camp. I don't know.
It was robot day.
Come on. Exactly. Exactly.
Well, you're going to read an excerpt for us. What did you pick out to read?
I just thought, I don't always do this, but I thought I would just read the first page.
Sure. Sounds good to me.
Okay. So this is Bummer Camp. It's chapter one, Old Maid of the Mist. The first rescue me text came from her sinkhole of a sister, Ginger, and it came in the middle of the night. Kat had been mentally flipping through the roster of pretty good colleagues, wondering who she could call and wake up if her water broke somewhere other than a hospital bed. Calling 911 should be reserved for heart attacks and burst spleens, not a healthy pregnant lady who could sit on a towel and drive herself 25 minutes to push, if push came to labor and delivery. When the second text arrived with a cheery ping, Kat ignored it and used the bathroom for the third time. Pregnancy was like Niagara Falls in their indoor plumbing, and Kat McCarthy was the old maid of the mist. Kat eased herself into bed, yanked the covers to her chin, and looked at the clock. She was in the phase of her pregnancy where no amount of sleep was enough sleep. But Ginger's text had a dark magnetism. They urged Kat to act impulsively in the same way that a whirlpool at the bottom of a waterfall beckoned. The swirling void whispered, "You could jump. Do it. Why not?" But Kat knew why not. Ginger's call had urgent requirements.
Excellent. Yeah. And as anybody can tell listening to that, it's fun. Laugh out loud in some spaces. And I just love books like that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And you just like these characters, and I mean, I could relate to a lot of them, but especially Kat, I'm afraid.
Same.
So you too, huh?
Yeah.
So explain Kat to our listeners.
So Kat is, you know, the most responsible of all of us, and she grew up at this camp being responsible for her younger sister and pretty much everybody else, because the father and the mother spent all their days managing the camp. And so as a function of that, whenever things didn't go well, she took it hard. And so the only way that she felt like she could get out from under this over sort of responsible thing was to stop making promises to anyone, because then you've got no one to disappoint but yourself. And so she isolates herself from the camp and from everything else and vows that she's never going to go back there. And of course, she has to.
She does.
She has to go back. Yeah.
Yeah. When I was first reading that, I'm like, would you just look at your text? Obviously, it's important.
Yeah. I love that it gave you anxiety.
I did. That's why I said I can really relate to her. And I really did like, too, where this is her younger sister. And like you said, she's always took care of her. And they just go right back into those roles the minute she comes onto the grounds.
Mm-hmm.
Do we tend to do that a lot?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what things when you go back home, you know, you become the kid and your parents become the parent. And sometimes you don't like that. But then it's comfortable, and all those roles, good or for bad,
mm-hmm.
that's what comfort feels like.
Yeah, it's very true. It's mm-hmm. comfort. I like that.
I like that.
Now, obviously, you were at this camp. Were there any other camping experiences that you had when you were younger?
You know, I only went to one overnight camp for Girl Scouts. I don't know why. I never really was in the camping experience, but I went to this one. And I spent the whole time crying wherever I could cry. Like, I'd go to the bathroom and have a good cry, and then I'd come out. And then when they shut the lights off, I was so homesick, and that delicious kind of homesick mm-hmm. where it feels so good to cry, and you can't really stop. And you don't really realize it's homesick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you spend the whole time going, I don't know what's happening. I can't stop crying.
Yeah.
And I was, what grade were they? Like, 8-year-olds or something.
Oh, that's so young. I know. Some kids go so early. And I was like, how did you do that? I, of course, grew up in Upper Michigan. And we have that
yes,
in common.
That's right.
And, you know, what's the point of going to camp when you're in
that's
the middle
it.
Of
I
the
think
wilderness?
That's, it.
That's
yeah.
the way I looked at it. But I did go to one camp that was in Wisconsin. And it was a horrible experience.
Oh, no.
And so I was like, why would people want to go to camp? But then I hear people who went to camp and they absolutely loved it and it created that community like you had it's, talked about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry that it was such a bad experience, but I can see how it could be.
It could be.
Yeah. I mean, it's ripe for that.
And it depends on the kind of camp you go to. These days, of course, there's so many specific ones,
uh-huh.
you know, like the theater camp
yeah.
and others that... Yeah, it's really nice because, again, people fit in. So
yeah.
that's really good.
You fit
good.
In, yeah.
Yeah. So you have given me a little, I love this card, it's a map of Bummer Camp.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, this didn't get in your book, but can people find it online?
I don't know. I'll have to put it online. I don't know if I've done that yet.
Oh, you should. It's
yeah,
really
I should do
nice.
That. It is beautiful,
yes.
actually.
And it tells you exactly where everything is in this camp, because there's a lot of there's a lot of buildings. There's a lot of characters. So yeah. Just warning you, pay attention when you're reading this.
Yeah.
Last year, you and your friends had a summer camp getaway.
We did.
What did you do?
Oh, my gosh. So everybody came on Friday. So they stayed Friday night, Saturday, and half of Sunday. And we brought other authors besides me. Mm-hmm. And we read books and we talked about books, and every author got to read at the campfire with marshmallows and s'mores. We had off times, hours where people could go do archery or go on the boats or just sit around and read. We did crafts. We did some of the things that write out of the book, where we did an auction with these weird things that I picked up at Goodwill, and they wrote stories about them. And we gave the camp like $1,000 after that because we did the auction.
Oh, my gosh.
We had a cake with, you know, the Bummer Camp icing on it. But it was so much fun. And honestly, it was such a, like, it made me, I was crying the whole time, which I'm not really a crier. But I just to have my future and my past kind of come together. And people from my high school came.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
How many people were there?
We had 60 people from 10 states.
Oh, my gosh.
And this year, in August, mm-hmm. we sold out in like 24 hours, 80 tickets, and we have like 250 people on the waiting list.
Oh, my gosh.
Like,
wow.
And I think part of it is that, like, this camp isn't really restricted. It's, you know, it's still used for kids that have disabilities or, you know. So and when people came, they were like, this is so much nicer than I thought it was going to be.
Yes.
We're like, yeah, it's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
But we used the whole grounds because we got the whole grounds.
Mm-hmm.
It was wonderful.
Oh, I love that. So if there's someone entrepreneur out there, they should probably be thinking about maybe doing this as a business, right?
Oh, we called it Grown-Up Lady Camp.
Grown-up Lady Camp.
It was so ridiculous and so fun.
I love it. Well, we're talking with Ann Garvin today. She's a USA Today bestselling author, and her latest book is called Bummer Camp. That's with a B. Do you have questions for Ann? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. And you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show on WPR. I am Jill Nadeau, and we are talking about this really fun novel called Bummer Camp. Before we get back to Anne, just a reminder that if you miss part of our show or just want to hear it again, you can always go to our archives at WPR.org/Larry, and you can hear the recordings of our broadcast, and they go way, way back. So anything that you like, I remember this from 10 years ago, you can try to find it. So, and good luck, but you can try to find it. And we had talked about Kat, who we hear this story from her eyes. Mm-hmm. What about Ginger, her sister? Tell us about her.
Well, you know, Ginger she's spent her life thinking that she's kind of a loser, you know, that her inability to, like, stay organized or stay focused in the way that her older sister is makes her feel like she's a lesser than person. But she's not a lesser than person. She's a creative person, somebody whose brain works differently than the rest of the people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can't put people into spots and skills unless they have those spots and skills. And so, you know, somebody with a very creative bent might struggle doing things like running a camp. And they, you know, the thing about Kat and Ginger was it was kind of fun for me to write it because in some ways I'm both of them. And I certainly have had a brain that has worked in all different kinds of ways and felt insecure about those ways. And then other times my brain has worked just fine doing things that are considered, you know, what people can praise and, you know, moving up in the world. So I have this two. And so sometimes, like, I feel like great. And then the other times I feel like such a loser because I always feel like I'm a car with one or two wheels rounding a corner on the road, you know. So it was kind of fun to come at both of those places with, you know, real love and empathy for both of them.
That's really key because you do write that into the characters. Mm-hmm. Because it could be very easy to not like some of these, you know, these two characters, but you do, you know,
you're
rooting for them
to,
you know, get over what their old relationship was. But very fun. We do have Jonah in Abrams has a comment for us. Go ahead, Jonah.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on. Yeah. I just wanted to say that I'm only 25 years old, but I remember in first grade singing the Camp Granada song. So that started playing at the beginning of the program. And yeah. I know you said, yes, like people of a certain vintage will remember it. But honestly, I'm not that old and I remember it. So
I love the
crappy summer camp experience. I think as long as we have as long as we have forests and lakes and things, that experience, there will always be Camp Granadas out there to, you know.
Yeah.
Very true.
Let's hope so.
Yes, exactly. And you know what, during when we're there, it's can be horrible, but afterwards, oh my gosh, we have so much fun talking about it. And yeah, so thank you, Jonah. Appreciate that. Dot in Manitowoc has a comment. Go right ahead, Dot.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm starting to put things together to write a book. And it's about, the name of the book is called Garden Giggles, things that have happened in my garden. And I have never done this before, so I don't know where to start. But I'm starting by just putting little paragraphs together of funny things that have happened in my garden. Where should I go from here?
Well, I could tell you the easiest place to find the best information about this is Jane Friedman. .com. She is sort of the first lady of all kinds of publishing information and how to write books. And you can find everything you need on that website. And she has a new book coming out. It's launching very soon. And it's The Business of Writing. And I would suggest, you know, either her last print of that or the one that's coming up is a great way, because you sort of have to understand both the business and the craft of it. And her website will give you everything you need.
All right. Well, Dot, good luck with that. And, you know, if you get to publishing, you just send us a copy here. It might work for our garden talk segment. So we know what it's like to have giggles in the garden. It's a great title.
It is. Okay.
I always thought that I would love to write a book just because I would like to do the names of the people and the names of the places and the businesses, but I'm too lazy to do the rest. Jane in Algoma, what can we help you with, or what do you have to tell us?
Is that me?
That's you.
Jane?
Yep.
It's Algoma. Algoma.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yep, I mispronounced that. Go right ahead, Jane.
When I was in high school, my mother was a cook at a camp up in Manakwa, Camp Agawak, and my sister and I took turns taking care of the boss's daughter.
Oh.
They didn't know that we were twins, so we each alternated one day at a time, and they didn't know there was two of us.
That's amazing.
I love that.
Oh, my gosh. That's such a great story.
Oh, thank you, Jane. I appreciate you sharing that with us. It kind of reminds me of The Parent Trap.
Yeah.
I just watched that, actually.
Yeah.
So, very fun. Some of the situations that happen in your book, what were some of the most fun ones to write?
Oh, I don't usually write a sex scene, but the sex scene was so much fun to write.
Mm-hmm.
I saw, you know, the one thing about a sex scenes is that in real life, they are very awkward, especially if you're having sex with somebody that you don't know and as well as maybe you should, even though she did know him very well. And she was pregnant. And so it was so fun to write that. Like, I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to do it, if I was going to skip it. But then it was like really fun to write. That was one of my favorites. And then the other scene that I don't want to give it away, but then when all of the campers come together just before the gala mm-hmm. is going to come, and they're all afraid that what they've set up is going to look terrible. And mm-hmm. they, by all rights, it should look terrible.
Should.
Yeah. And that moment of hope and quirkiness was really fun to write, too.
Yeah, I can see that. There were a lot of really, really fun ones. And the characters themselves. We all know these people.
We do.
Yeah.
You do.
Did you base them off of people that you knew?
Or? I don't. No. Yeah. They just sort of come to me whole.
Okay.
But, you know, they're not unfamiliar you know, to anyone, I think. I think that you can kind of picture any of them. But no, I don't. I don't base them on people. And if I did, I think I would get hung up on what those real people would or wouldn't do. So I just create the new ones. A lot of times people will say, I think that's me, you know. And I think, well, everybody sort of says that. And almost always they're wrong. So
isn't that funny how we see ourselves so differently than how others see us?
Yeah. But I love that they put themselves in the characters.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I want them to
do. Oh, for sure. For sure. I love to do that myself.
Yeah.
Now, like you had read there the first page. Kat is pregnant. So why did you want to have your main character pregnant?
You know, there's a couple of things about making someone pregnant. One, it's a sight gag. So anything she does, and camp is usually like acres and acres. So she's really got to get moving through the whole camp. And I just thought, that's funny. And then also there's a ticking clock associated with it. So you never know, you know, what's going to happen? Are we going to see her deliver? Are we not going to see her deliver? Like, we need to have this sorted out before she does it. She makes it very clear that that has to happen. So there was a couple of reasons. And then there had to be sort of some tension about who the father was and what he had to do with the camp and whether it was going to survive. So it was kind of a good point for a whole bunch of her desires to have problems with, you know.
When you do a book, do you have the idea first and then the characters or?
Yeah, I have like a, so what I usually do is I have a premise, like some kind of premise that strikes me as interesting. And then I can't let it go. If I can't let it go, then I know, okay. And then I look at it and go, why does that interest me so much? Like, what is it about that that you want to explore? And then I think of a character that would be absolutely miserable if put in there. And then I build the book around that character. And the premise is like her worst nightmare.
I love that.
Yeah.
So you've done that with your other books?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do it with my other books often. Sometimes I have a title first. Like with I Like You Just Fine When You're Not Around, I have that title first.
I love that title. It's great.
And then I was like, who is that? But often I just come up with like what if somebody was on the Hollywood set, didn't even watch movies, had to be a costumer and had but couldn't leave and needed to work. Like and so then I try to put people, I sort of like the idea of putting normal people, normal meaning like people that are just living their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody.
Right.
And put them in like a situation where they have to be a superhero and they have no skills in that regard, like zero skills. Like, because whenever I'm watching a movie or like some major thing happens and that person has to be, you know, they're all of a sudden they're great at karate or something. My people have no skills.
So like most of us.
Yeah, like
right?
us. You like know? Most of us.
We
yeah.
have this, you know, all of a sudden it happens to you and then you just have to
yeah.
get smart fast as you can. So,
yeah.
yeah.
And you
yeah.
just do it with what skills you have and. And that, to me, is funny.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
It's just very funny.
Because funny is kind of what you're aiming for, right?
Yeah.
You want to put these horrible situations, but, you know, you laugh at them. They're
yeah.
not quite so bad.
Right. I think everything, I always say this, I think everything's funny and a little bit sad, but I really do. And
that's true.
All human situations, usually, they're just kind of, like, I spent a lot of time writing postcards for a candidate last night, and I kept thinking about things that I could put in there that I did not do. And all of those moments to me are moments where I would like to explore it for some reason.
Uh-huh.
People's oddities.
Well, you kind of do that in one of the times where you do have Kat and one of the people from the park writing, making up stories about this art that's been abandoned so mm-hmm. that they can auction it off. And the sadder the story, the better it
yeah.
gets. You must have had a good time doing that.
Oh, my God. That was so fun. I had to cut a bunch of them because I was like, you're having too good of a time. Nobody's going to read these stories.
Okay, so maybe you need to put that on social media, you know, once a month. Here's
once
another
month.
Story with a really horrible piece of art.
Yeah. That was really funny and fun
yes.
to do.
And it is funny because, you know, we were talking about the Wizard of Oz earlier and how much a pair of Dorothy's shoes just went for.
How much was it?
32.2 $33.2 million, what? I believe. It was crazy. It was in December. But it's like much of the story in the background is what they're worth. So
yes.
It's really similar to that kind of a thing.
It is.
But any art, I think, is like that.
Art is like that. Mm-hmm. And actually, that was based on a study. That study that I said in the book, there actually was a place where they took weird things, wrote stories about them, and got big money for it. And I thought that would be ridiculous and also great.
It is great. Absolutely. Yeah. So anybody out there planning an auction? Okay, there you go.
There you go.
We planned it out for you.
Mm-hmm.
Dave in Sun Prairie with a question. Go right ahead, Dave.
Yes, I was just wondering if you had a software plan or something I could put into my phone where when you type a book that you're working on into it, that it maybe devises it in chapters already, or a way to kind of set the book up and how you type it into some type of a software.
You know, I think there is probably screenplay software for that kind of thing, and certainly there are like I use Scrivener when I'm writing, but Scrivener, you have to put all the information in. It doesn't do anything for you except it's an online like notebook kind of. And there are other kind of novel projects that help you put things into things like in a three-act structure or something like that. There's another one and I just can't remember what it's called, but there is novel writing software that sort of helps you. It wouldn't automatically sort it for you, but it would definitely, help you see how you might organize your story around the largest emotional component that your story is about.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate that call. You're in a group of writers, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but how important is that for someone like, the lady that was writing the Garden Giggles, and for Dave, who are interested in writing a book but have no experience?
Yeah.
So is a group like that a really good starting point, too?
Well, I think our group is like a marketing group where we try really hard to get, we are super generous with our connections and make sure that we shout out about our members' work and things like that. But when I first began, since I was a scientist, I didn't have any experience with writers. I didn't know any authors. I didn't know anything about the business. So I started from scratch. And without a doubt, getting to know other writers who are interested in the same thing as you, everyone is going to have a different piece of information. And building that community is probably the best thing you can do for yourself. So, there's free classes at libraries, or there are online. You can find so many classes. There's podcasts called, there's one that I love called The Shit Don't Tell Us About Writing. Sorry.
But, okay, we beeped that out.
Okay, sorry. But that's what it's called. And it's run by an agent and a couple of different authors. And so like Chicago Writers Conference, Let's Just Write is happening in March. You could go there, you meet the people that are sitting next to you, and you collect names. And building that community is not only going to help you write your book, it's going to help you learn about the business. And then when the business is over and you get a book out, whatever, however you decide to do it, those are the people that support you.
Yeah, that's really important, isn't it?
It is, because, you see, as a writer, you see people kind of glaze over when you tell them about your book. And that can be useful, because you can kind of go, okay, I got to figure out a different way to say it because people look bored. But also your partners, they don't know what you're going through necessarily. And it's really helpful to have other people that know what you're doing. For a long time, I had to explain to my friends, like, I don't just sit down and write. Like, it's not just in my head and it comes out on my...
If only, right?
Yeah. Like, every sentence I write has to be attached to the sentence before it and a sentence in the future. So I have to hold the whole book in my head when I'm writing that. And I remember when I was telling someone that, they're like, oh, I just thought you had 2 hours in the morning and you just got it all down. I was like, oh, yeah, no, that's not how it is.
Yeah, I think that some people don't realize how hard work. It is a lot of work. It's a lot of concentration. And you have to have a story people want to be interested in.
Yeah.
People have asked me, too. It's because we do so many books. You know, it's like, I've got this book, and it's a memoir. And I'm like, okay, but what's
the
story? What's the story? You start here, and you go here. How does, basic stuff like that. So finding these groups, getting this advice. Yes. So important.
So important. Mm-hmm. You know, it took me a really long time to even talk about this way, but in my experience, because I teach at Drexel MFA and I've taught at several other MFAs and I teach at conferences all the time, that I do think the number one problem that people have is they don't have a story.
Yeah.
They have a premise and they have a lot of events, but they don't have the story of an emotional arc that makes us feel something so strong that we understand what that character wants and needs, and we hope that they get something, even though they might not.
Yeah.
And I think often people think a story is, you know, just a series of events, and it's not. It's a story is only a story if we have our emotions attached to it and we're watching someone change because of the things that we've put in their place.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, if anybody ever remembers anything that I've ever said, that will change the way that you watch movies, read books. All of a sudden you start to see it and you're like, oh, I get it now. That's why I'm so interested in this.
Yes.
And that's why I'm not interested in this other book or television show or something.
I think probably a good place to even do that in a short, compacted thing is a play.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's specifically written to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's three acts or however many it is. It's just like 2 hours of your time or 3 hours. How did they manage to tell that entire story in just that in that short period of time? So that's a really good template to start.
Mm-hmm.
So we had mentioned earlier about the Wizard of Oz playing lots of parts in this book. Do you love the Wizard of Oz? Is it a favorite?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because, yes, I do love the Wizard of Oz, but mostly because I love the idea of the each person having something like a core wound that they are trying to change, and they are bold enough to try to change that core wound. And so for me and the characters, I wanted the people in that to understand or at least come through their core wounds one way or the other. And it was really fun to put a parallel into the Wizard of Oz because I think it shows how well that story is told, but also how that's sort of everyone's story. We just want to be okay. We want to go home. We want to feel comfortable with whatever it is we're fighting with. Like maybe we just don't feel like we're smart enough, or maybe we're just, you know, don't have a heart for something. And I love the premise of that.
Mm-hmm. And that really does inform the characters that you have. And so I listened to the book because...
Oh, yeah, that's fun. She's great. Andy Arndt.
She did a really good job.
Isn't she great?
I'm very picky about my author.
Me too.
My narrators. And she's wonderful. And so I listened to it all the way through and I'm like, I think I need to listen to it again because I enjoyed it so much. I really wasn't paying attention to all this stuff that I should be if I'm going to interview you, right? So I listened to it again and I was like, oh, wow, I forgot about that. And this was really good. It's not a short book. I mean, it's like 10
really.
Hours, I think,
yeah.
on Audible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really fun to get that perspective. Did you have any say into who was going to be the
usually
narrator?
They do let me... audition them. They send me audition tapes. But Andy, I think, did the last one. And so I was like, I love her. She can do it.
Yeah. It's nice when you have a narrator associated with the authors that you like.
Yeah. And I know that she would do a good job. Like, I tried to audition for it myself, but I'm glad they didn't pick me, honestly, because I think she does a better, more professional job.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of hard, though. I mean, you've got like a theater kind of background,
I do have a theater background. And also I have a very loud Wisconsin accent, which I thought would be fun. But I'm not sure I could change my voices like she did. Like, she was really good at it.
Mm-hmm. The key to those good narrators is that they can change their voice subtly where it doesn't hit you in the face.
I don't know how they do it.
It's amazing. It really
is. It's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I just got this from Clara. She said that you are friends with Christina Clancy, who we talked to last week.
I know.
About her book.
Yeah.
So how did you guys get to know each other?
So it's so great, actually. So in 2004, the Wisconsin Book Festival had a fiction writing contest. And I entered the contest having no experience writing fiction at all, but it was $10. You had to write it in 24 hours. They sent you a piece of art, and then you had to write a story about it. And I thought, nobody will know that I didn't win. Nobody will know I entered. Nobody will know. But I just thought it seemed like a fun challenge.
Sure.
And so when they sent it, I did it. And then, you know, it was like 3 months or something. It was a long time before we heard anything. And then I was in a wedding in San Francisco when I got a phone call that said, you won second place.
Oh, my goodness.
And they were like, everybody that entered the contest is going to be at the Orpheum Theater waiting to see if they heard and won. And we're going to announce all the winners tonight. And I was like, tonight?
Oh, my gosh.
So I missed it. Somebody else came in and read my story on the stage, which was great.
Uh-huh.
But Christy won first place.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't know Christy at the time. And then after that, I connected with her. She was living in Milwaukee at the time. And then over the years, we've just gotten to be very close.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, that's really fun. Mm-hmm. I love that. So before that, why did you decide to do that? I mean, were you always interested in writing?
Well, I've always been a heavy reader, like a wonderful reader. And authors, honestly, were my superheroes, like ever since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And I would write letters to them. But I never thought that I had the ability to write a book. I hadn't had any ideas. But people would say to me, oh, you know, I would write letters. And people were like, why aren't you writing a book? And I was like, I don't know. How do you write a book? How do you even get an idea? And so I think it was just kind of... It was just a challenge, and I thought, this maybe I could write this short story. Maybe I could do that. And so what it did for me was all it did was say to me, oh, you picture something in your head, and you write it down and describe it, and now I have a million story ideas. And so it opened up my world in a way that I would never have done before. I'm so glad that I did it because it changed my life.
Yeah.
And I do think it was like one of the happiest days of my life. And I mean, I had babies, but babies hurt when they come out. So this was like without pain. It was a surprise from the universe. It was the most amazing thing. And it just, and the other thing, it validates your voice so much. And I was in a PhD program where, you know, my professor kept saying to me, my mentor, he's like, you are the worst writer I've ever met. And honestly, I really wasn't meant to write science.
Mm-hmm.
Science is telling a story, but telling a story in a really prescribed way.
Yes.
I was terrible at it.
Probably because you wanted to add too much flourish.
Yeah, I would
right?
be like, the subjects have blue eyes. And he'd be like, you can't. What are you doing? I don't care.
It's part of the story.
It was so hard. I kept changing the words instead of using, don't change that sentence. It's like, oh my God, I'm so bad at this. And I had published a lot of science. In fact, one of my sciences is in here as an Easter egg.
Oh.
In the book, one of my articles that I published, I used it.
Oh, okay. I know which one you're talking about. I didn't realize that. That is cool.
Yeah.
We are talking to Ann Garvin. She is a USA Today bestselling author, and her latest is the funny and fun and just lovely Bummer Camp. If you have any questions for Ann about writing or maybe about, you want to tell us about your experience at summer camp, we'd love to hear from you. Number is 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Najah. I hope you can join us again tomorrow on Garden Talk. Liz Fremoth is back to tell us how plants are adapting to climate change. And you'll also hear about research being done on roses. Right now, we're talking about the novel Bummer Camp with Ann Garvin. So, Ann, what are you working on now?
Oh, thank you for asking. I'm working on a new novel that I have to get in by September 1st.
Okay.
And it's called Tell Two Friends. And it's the story, it's a little bit of a departure for me. The story is about a woman who wrote to an incarcerated man when she was in college. And 25 years later, he moves in next door unbeknownst to her and is watching her. And so, again, it's funny and sad. Her story is very funny and sad, and it's wrapped in a thriller. And the reason that I wanted to write that was this idea, again, of just us living our lives with our own little traumas, and then some larger thing is happening. So I'm writing it from the point of view of the person watching, and then her life, completely oblivious that she's being watched.
Oh, that sounds really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she's had a moment in her life where she is really felt like she's lost her ability to judge people. And so she, at the climax, she's really tested. And she's got to have a gut feeling about something.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of hard, isn't it, sometimes, to follow your gut feeling?
Well, the world is constantly telling you you're wrong, right?
Yep,
so,
yep.
Yeah. So it's a really fun, it's super fun, and I really hope I can pull it off.
Oh, I'm sure you will. I'm sure you will. We'll look forward to it, so make sure that I get a copy.
I will. So. Absolutely.
So what do you love about being a writer?
Oh, my gosh, so many things.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite my dream job, without a doubt. I get to meet other authors. I get to talk about writing and stories every day, all day. I get to watch TV and think, this is research. I get to sit and sort of explore all of the things that I need to explore in my own brain that maybe if I started to do it in a real way, I might stop. But this forces me to go all the way through some really tough things and topics. I get to talk about the things that I did research in for all those years and put in my characters in it. I don't know. Like when I was a professor and I was teaching health behavior, which nobody wants to know. No one wants to know that they have to change their health behavior.
Nobody like wants to hear it. No.
Nobody wants to hear. I mean, you are the worst. They'd rather take a class and, you know, physics than listen to you about I can't drink that much beer, you know.
Yes.
So it was a hard thing, but sometimes I get to put some of those things, sneak them in a little, mm-hmm. which I absolutely love to be able to do. It's sort of stealth. It's like a Trojan horse of health in the book.
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, there are some of those things in there.
Yeah.
So I kind of, now that I know that, I can definitely hear that.
Yeah.
So, you had mentioned earlier that you that because Kat is pregnant, it's visually funny, you're writing a book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there's not that visual unless you describe it.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have this picture in your head mm-hmm. of what you're seeing to make mm-hmm. it fun, and then you describe it?
Yeah.
What are the keys of doing it well? And not too much description,
oof,
but
yeah.
enough?
Oh, that's such a good question. Holy cow. I try to keep it in scene so that you are experiencing it as the reader as along with the person writing it. So, and then if there is a descriptive thing, it's sort of like when you describe, like if I'm going to say to you, you know, oh, I broke my foot. I went to the hospital the other day. I got an x-ray. It's broken. And then I go into the story.
Yeah.
That narrative has to be this tiny little thing that says like, oh yeah, she's wearing this or
yeah.
whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then I try really hard to not make it an isolated thing where she isn't living, she isn't grounded in the moment on the ground. And so I try really hard to like picture it and try to bring the senses in and make it in scene and try to cut out anything that isn't necessary to move the plot forward, but also make everybody feel usually cringy, often embarrassed. And also then, oh my God, I'm so sad for her.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think truly, to be honest, I think it's mostly because I love my characters. I love them so much. And the ones I don't like, I dislike so much that it's I just get around my own emotion in it. And then I try really hard to describe it. But I think if you're detached from your people that you're writing about, you can't really write it
mm-hmm.
in the way that the other people need to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I sometimes I do it well. Other times, you know, it takes a long time.
Yeah, of course.
So much deleting.
What is it like to work with a publisher? Mm. I mean, you know, that's the dream,
mm-hmm.
okay? But what does it come down to?
Well, comes down to your relationship with the publisher and sort of an agreement that you have that you are both professionals working towards the same goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that being smart about what you want and who you are while still understanding that they're the professionals and experts in certain areas is a very important thing. And it's, you know, over the years, I was more like, I will write this book for buttons for you if you want. And then I became more like, I don't like that cover, you know. And so, and But I was always like, I may not like that cover, but I bet if you change that, I'll bet we could kind of work our way through it. And so I tell everybody, if you're going to work with a publisher, if you're trying to find an agent, the first thing you need to do is take your meds.
Okay, let me write this down.
Yeah, take your meds. Get yourself centered. And then, you know, understand that this part of the creative process is not creative. It's business. Mm-hmm. It's all business. And yes, they're going to create the cover. And yes, they're going to create some of the back jacket copy. And they're going to create the marketing, which is all creative. But still, they're doing it for a reason. They're doing it for a business. And I think one of the things that I have great respect for is when people have skills that I don't have. I don't try to micromanage them. Because I know that I'm not good at it. Why mm-hmm. would I tell them their jobs?
Yeah.
Unless I see something that's really glaring, but it rarely happens. Mm-hmm. I have found to have such pretty good experiences with publishers. Having said that, I've had several.
Oh, you have?
Yeah. Okay. Like I had Penguin Random House for two and Simon & Schuster and then now it's Lake Union, and I've had Lake Union for the last bunch of them, who are great.
Yeah,
fantastic.
And that kind of makes sense because your covers are different.
Yeah, they're really different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of funny where publishers have a look.
Yep.
Isn't that? And it's a trendy kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. I probably said this before, and I apologize if you heard it, but so many, I was so tired of getting books where there's women on the cover but facing away from you. I mean, how many?
Historical fiction?
Yes.
Yeah. Everyone.
Why?
I don't know. It got to be ridiculous.
Yes, it was.
It is silly.
Well, John called, but he couldn't stay with us. And he wants to know, what's the path from writing your book to getting it published?
Oof.
I'm sure people ask you that a lot.
They do. And it's a really good question. It's probably something you and I could talk about on the radio for 3 hours, but
well,
really,
we've got 5 minutes.
Yeah. I think you need to read Jane Friedman's The Business of Publishing and read as much as you can about it, because once you write the book, you have to get it cleaned up and edited and absolutely best. But then you have to learn about marketing so that when you are talking about your book, you're talking about it in a way that makes people interested in it. And that's a marketing hat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I spend a lot of time teaching that very thing because it's something that can be learned, but you really have to put the time in. And if you don't, you're going to have some trouble. You know?
Yeah. And a publisher won't necessarily do all of the publicizing that you want it. So you're in there. I mean,
you
do social media really well.
You really are in there doing it. Mm-hmm. Yep. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, well, I'm not going to do that. And I think, okay, but you have to show your publisher that you're in there to win it, you know? Mm-hmm. And also, I also say, you know, nothing works and everything works, but I've been doing this for 12 years. I have about 11,000 people on my email list. I wouldn't have had that. I started with one.
You're right. Yeah.
And that's what you need to do. So it's a big job.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not for everybody.
No.
And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And if you self-publish, good for you.
Yeah.
Like, criminy, you get it out there, you give it to your family, you sell a few books. Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful thing.
It is. It is wonderful. But
yeah.
Don't be afraid of an editor, right?
Don't be afraid of it. Never be afraid of an editor.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an editor. Her name is Tiffany Yates Martin. She's amazing. And we have like a throwdown. But I don't think she knows it's a throwdown because I'm having it at my house alone. But she, she pushes me really hard to be the best. But then sometimes, you know, I push back and you know, she always says, this is your book. This is your book. And so you have to listen to them and change things and not change something. It's a fight to the finish.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And it's not finished when you say the end at the end of
no.
that first
oh, God,
go
no.
through.
No, it surely isn't. Yeah.
It's got to be really hard to cut out things that you've worked so hard on.
I have to say, less than it used to be because I'm writing on a deadline. So I just like chop things. But
yeah.
Especially if I have a line that I like love and I carry that dang line all the way through the end and I think I don't have a spot for it. So that's hard. But the other thing I would say is that like when I'm editing a paragraph, sometimes that paragraph takes 4 hours to edit.
Yeah, people don't understand. It's,
wordsmithing.
Yeah.
Wordsmithing.
Well,
yeah.
And we've had a wonderful time.
Oh, we have.
Thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it. So Ann Garvin has been our guest. Her latest book is Bummer Camp. I really you know, I really recommend you go out and buy it.
Thank
you will enjoy it. So thank you for being with
us. Yeah, it's such a great thing to be here.
And I want to thank our team. We've got Claire Neipert, Joel Patenaude. We've got Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins. And, of course, Larry Mueller is our general host. I'm the executive producer, Jill Nadeau. Thank you so much for being with us. Skinner.
He got ptomaine poisoning last night after dinner. All the counselors, this should scare you. But my bunkmate has malaria. You remember?